businesses, based on their profits, they get to deduct their expenses, such as their wages, right? So I don't know that it's really all that much different.
Well, that's a good question for the Revenue Bureau. Let's flag that for them.
Yeah, I'd like, and when you find that out, I'd like to know what the proposed tax is on the on Uber and how much the total would expect it to be. And
again, my assumption has been they pay the same business license tax rate that any other company does.
Okay, I got that one.
Good point. Please. Thank you. So continuing on with vehicle signage notices, this is really a safety issue for both TNCs and taxis. We recommend either cameras or some other verifiable way to track driver and passenger identity that could be made available within a 24-hour period should law enforcement request it. For TNCs, we require that we recommend that drivers display a company address of some sort or marking, and our understanding is that city staff is developing specifications for this. For taxis, we recommend retaining current signage requirements.
So on the cameras, the reason that we required cameras in taxis was for the driver's safety after some attacks by passengers on drivers. Mm-hmm. And since the very essence of the TNC is that it's a smartphone that they all do video, why are we not requiring that the at least audio, maybe you need your phone on to do your navigation, but why would you not have audio recording going as a safety mechanism for both driver and passenger?
Mm-hmm. We did not discuss audio recording, but I appreciate your notation of that. We were concerned that in this first phase, requiring additional technology to be installed in personal vehicles would potentially pose a barrier, and there are companies out there that are waiting to operate.
Everybody has a phone. I mean, that's how you get the app. That's how you get the ride. Mm-hmm. So you mount your phone on your wherever you mount it, and leave the video on. That doesn't require any additional equipment.
Okay, thank you.
Good point.
But you're saying you are going to require cameras for the TNC vehicles.
Yeah.
No, either cameras or some other verifiable way to identify a passenger and a driver.
For the driver
and the passenger. So in the case of TNCs, it would be that information could be tracked to the app, the information that's collected when someone requests a ride.
Okay.
And then finally, in regards to street hailing and taxi lines, we recommend that TNCs not pick up street hails or queue up in taxi stands, acknowledging that they're a different model and they are marked differently.
Okay. Thank you very much. So let's proceed on to the next part of your task force report.
We're almost done.
Thank you, Mike Greenfield again. The final item in the regulations that vary has to do with data reporting. And we're asking for monthly basis data reporting from both TNCs and taxis and from some historical data from taxis as the basis for developing our phase two recommendations, and that's the final variable requirement. We think this information will be very important to us in developing our next recommendations.
Mike, how do you envision us enforcing that requirement as to TNCs? And I'm asking it in the context of significant national litigation around what kind of information TNCs will provide to local government, and a lot of arguments around privacy and proprietary information and other kinds of things. So on the theory that we want to make sure whatever data sharing requirement sticks and that the enforcement works, and I'm reminded that as of today, Airbnb, 95% of the hosts are not in compliance with our rules. So we have a history of a bit of a lag in terms of getting industry compliance. I ask you, as a serious matter, how do we ensure that we get that data in light of pretty significant resistance on a whole host of legal grounds by the industry to provide that to local regulators?
Well, first, I want to thank you for not putting me on the Airbnb task force.
Be careful.
Yeah. I think you just salted an idea with the mayor.
I think it depends on the appetite that the city has for enforcement. I think that the question has to do with a whole series of things that we're recommending in terms of standards and what you have to do business in the city of Portland.
Can I just draw a distinction? I think we would all agree there's enforcement and there's enforcement. And I hope that we are not going to embark on an experiment where there is any doubt about our ability to get that data. And I would further hope that since there's a limited number of players in the marketplace, that we have in writing a commitment that we will get the data that we are requiring by law, and which the very success of this pilot program depends on from these providers. And I hope we'll also be told today, if not before we take up the resolution, whether any of these internet companies are intending not to comply with that requirement. Because it does seem to me the data is fundamental to what you're asking us to do, which is to do a pilot and then evaluate the data. Without the data, it seems self-defeating.
Commissioner, I agree that the data is critically important. And I do want to note that we have demonstrated recently that we take enforcement of these regulations pretty seriously. When one player started operating illegally, we brought a lawsuit, and they wound up agreeing to stop operating illegally, and then we collected fines. So we would certainly treat the failure to provide the data that we're talking about as a serious violation, which could lead at the end of the 120-day period to a license, to a permit to operate not being renewed.
Someplace in the city of Portland, there's an archive stacked floor to ceiling with great policy ideas that were never executed. And the reason they weren't executed was that the data wasn't collected, the standards to enforce that policy were not rooted in realistic, measurable data. There was no standard that was measurable. There were no outcomes that were enforced. I mean, at the state level and at the city level, we've got all kinds of examples of that. The 20% requirement for vehicles for the existing fleet is a good example of that. And what we hope to do by collecting this data is to give you the tools to develop an execution of this policy that establishes standards, establishes a way to measure whether they're complied with or not, and the tools to enforce them if they're not.
Well, and one of the things I might suggest is, building on some of your excellent recommendations, is that before the city issues a permit, somebody signs a document saying we agree to conform to this particular requirement and we waive any legal objections to providing the data that we've requested, because I think it would be a breach of faith if we find ourselves in extended litigation trying to get the very data that you have, I think, correctly identified as necessary to us to evaluate the success of. That feels like heads you win, tails we lose.
Well, and you need to provide sufficient data and staffing to ensure that these people, these companies, are complying with it, and you need to have a definition of else in the term, do this our way or else.
Yep.
Like that. You are going to be on the Airbnb task force.
Well, thank you.
I like that attitude.
Just sealed that deal.
That does it.
Oh, wow.
At this point, I'd like to thank the task force for all the work they did. I'd like to thank the drivers who came and spoke with us. I'd like to thank the potential drivers that talked with us, and the companies that talked with us, and the public that came in and talked with us. It's all been very valuable. It's been fast, and we look forward to more of it. At this point, I want to note that the task force received two additional presentations and voted to forward them to the board as concepts the task force would be considering in phase two. Sue will be introducing a presentation of the Portland Equal Access Plan, and Casey.
Yep, he's here.
Yeah.
Yes, will be present comments from the Center for Cultural Organizing, and then after
you want
that,
us to hold our generic questions till the to the two other reports,
please, and then we'll come back up and respond to questions. Thank you.
Thank you, Casey. Come on up, please. Good afternoon. Welcome.
Good afternoon. My name is Sue Stahl. I'm with the Portland Commission on Disability and is a task force member. The experience of being on the task force was very unique, and I do want to say for the record that not all issues were passed unanimously on the task force. So the Portland Equal Access Plan, or PEAP, puts forth recommendations that were crafted following a comprehensive review of the private-for-hire transportation regulatory system, as well as review of what has been tried in other jurisdictions throughout the country. This plan is included in the task force recommendations as Attachment A. We are advocating to apply the same fare rules to taxis and Uber, the other TNCs. All companies must be required to provide an equal level of service for persons requesting transportation by wheelchair-accessible vehicles. Taxi companies endorsed the Portland Equal Access Plan as well as the Portland Commission on Disability, and we are asking for the city to accept this plan. Today, it is a fact that people that request wheelchair-accessible vehicles receive second-class service, frequently experience wait times of up to 4 hours, usually 2 to 4 hours. The 30-minute reasonable wait time standard that is currently in code for requests for wheelchair-accessible vans has never been enforced, and as far as I can tell, has never been met. The reason is this. There is a system-wide shortage of accessible vehicles available on demand. However, the limited amount of accessible vehicles that the taxi companies own are being contracted out to other businesses, such as non-emergency medical transportation, TriMet Lyft, Ride Connection, etc. The system is broken and has been broken for a long time. Here are just some of the examples. An 82-year-old female had made arrangements several days in advance to be picked up by a wheelchair van at 3 o'clock p.m. on August 23, 2014, for a high school reunion. The cab company dispatcher called her that day of the appointment and told her that a wheelchair van wasn't accessible to pick her up and canceled her trip. A passenger requested a high-clearance wheelchair van. After waiting 2 hours, dispatch was called, and he was told to request another ride. Another passenger arranged a trip to a doctor's appointment. The ride was 50 minutes late. I have been told about a 98-year-old woman who was left out in the cold for 5 hours, and a man who almost did not make it to his dialysis appointment because his medical transportation did not pick him up. On a personal note, I no longer request wheelchair-accessible vehicles. In fact, I specifically request not to have this type of vehicle to pick me up simply because I cannot afford to wait 2+ hours for one to become available. This doesn't mean I don't need an accessible vehicle. I do. I just now rely on friendly drivers and passersby to pull me up from the low seats or to pick me up after I have trouble stepping into the car. Requiring Uber and other TNCs to contract out to this limited supply will exacerbate the situation. The PEAP recommendation allows companies to explore other avenues for providing service to the disability community. They may know of some other companies that they can rely on. Maybe an entrepreneur is developing a fleet. Maybe some TNC drivers actually own accessible vehicles. The Portland Equal Access Plan also does away with the current policy of fleet requirement standard of 20%, now 10%, to measure ADA service success, and instead has a clear regulatory benchmark, measurable service response times. The goal is to achieve parity by having equal response times for wheelchair-accessible vehicle rides and non-wheelchair-accessible vehicle rides. Now, about enforcement, we can have the best policies in the world, but if there are no ways, no meaningful ways to enforce them, then we have failed. Unfortunately, we have already seen this happen. The 30-minute wait time that I mentioned earlier has never been enforced. The 20%, and now I guess 10%, and I think it was 30% a few years ago, which, you know, is a very unsettling trend. Accessible fleet has not been enforced. This cannot continue. There needs to be enforcement and meaningful reprimand to companies in order to change, in order for this change to happen and civil rights met. The Portland Equal Access Plan incorporates this logic and puts forward the proposal of pulling a company's license for 1 year if they fail to meet parity. This will apply both for taxis and TNCs. I am concerned that if council does not act now to put PEEP in place, the political obstacles will make it much harder to do later. As you mentioned, how do you put the genie back in the bottle? If council imposes new requirements, many Portlanders may love Uber and other TNCs. If council imposes new requirements in phase two, Uber and the other TNCs could threaten to withdraw from the market, as they have done in other jurisdictions, and council will have many constituents who will want them to stay. My point is that Portland has a maximum leverage now, so let's use it. The time is now to fix the broken system and ensure that Portland is a truly livable city for everyone. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Mr. Jama?
Good afternoon, Mayor Hales, and good afternoon, Commissioners. My name is Casey Chama. I want to first of all make a disclaimer. I am actually I'm not here to speak on behalf of the task force. I think my comments is very much more personal. I'm also here to offer you some comments rather than recommendations of what needs to happen. First of all, I really enjoyed being part of this robust discussion as member of the task force, and I think Jim, our chair, and the rest of the team really did a great deal of time, spent a great deal of time in such a short period of time trying to come up a recommendation that's going to work for all. Having said that, there is several areas that I have a concern is that I want to highlight, and I hope that people who are smarter than me will probably be wrestling with. First of all, let me say this. I think some of you raised about the insurance issue. My goal and my hope is that whatever recommendations we put forward, we come a palatable system that have a uniformity across the board, whether it's the TNC or whether it's the cab companies. I personally actually also had a concern during the task force, the third-party liability disclaimer that Uber has in their system. And I asked that question, and I don't know if I ever get a satisfactory answer. So I think it will hope that in order to protect the public, we have to create an insurance system that really not only holds accountable to the companies, but also creates a ways that we protect and our public. And so that's one area that I want to mention about the insurance. Second piece is that it's the vehicle inspection issue. I think also this is another uniformity issue for me I recommended, or at least I suggested, that we should keep the current existing regulations as it is right now. particularly for me, it was concerned to eliminate requirement of fire extinguishers as well as the extra spare tires. I think if you end up having an elderly person or someone who is a disability and having a vehicle and end up that vehicle catching a fire, the situation is that where a fire extinguisher may be needed, it's important, public safety to me. Another area that it has been, you raised questions and been discussed is the fare issue. That's an issue for me also that I really have an important consideration. I think whatever we come up with, we have to create a system. If we are requiring cab companies to charge a certain cab or certain amount of dollars, I think it, whatever it takes, we have to create that same situation with the TNCs. And so, or if we eliminate, which I'm not advocating for, all I'm saying is that it has to be uniform and it has to be transparent. It has to be equitable to both systems. And what I think at this point, we're not there yet. I think Sue really spoke areas of accessibility, and I think I agree with her concerns. I think she has been really advocating and voice for the at the table, and I think I'm hoping that we will figure out ways to accommodate in our disability community to ensure that they have services. The last area that I'm going to make a comment is area that I am totally understand that is actually contrary to the concept of Uber and TNCs, which is one is that accepting only credit card or debit card systems. And I think if you do that, you're very much eliminating portion of the Portlanders who might actually might not have those kind of mechanism and able to pay. So I'm assuming if we're asking them companies to accept all systems of form, so it has to be uniformity again, cash, credit card, debit card, and so forth and so on. The other last one I want to have comment will be also dispatch system. I think also I understand it's also the contrary to the system of TNCs, but I think also in terms of equity, I'm assuming if somebody is unable to have a smartphone or unable to even use it or call, there has to be ways that they can call in because whether they're blind or whether they're, and I know that there is a system where people can use if even though they're blind. All I'm saying is that there has to be some level playing field throughout the system. And I think we're almost there, but I think there is an area that we really need, those areas that I mentioned, that really needs to be needing quite a little bit at debate and dialogue.
Casey, can I ask you about that question, that issue you raised? So I have a similar concern because not everybody has a smartphone, not everybody has a debit card or a credit card. And when I raised that with someone, one of the answers I got back was, well, in our system, you could still use a traditional cab company that doesn't require a smartphone and does accept cash. So how do you respond to that?
I think it's a fair question, and I think the question for me is not about whether you have an alternative, but whether you have an equitable and palatable system. That's really my answer to your question, Commissioner Fish, is that. And I think finally, I'm one last thing I want to mention is that I think we are charting a new territory as a city. And I think we have to also figure out the impact that this current system, if it kicks off, is going to have our existing system, particularly the cab companies and the drivers themselves. I don't know what that is going to look like, whether it's going to crash it. And I think those folks are really, their lives are dependent on those things. So I think as a city, we really have to think about what impact it will create as we move forward. And I think overall, and this is more maybe my own comments, but I do believe that we shouldn't be trying to feed Uber's business model as a city. I think we should be asking Uber to fit our current structures and current systems that are existing. So I think that's my own understanding of where we need to be as a city. So I will stop there, and I will I really appreciate for the opportunity to serve this great city. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you both. Questions for these folks?
Have
further questions?
Okay.
Mayor, I did want to ask Sue a question.
Yeah.
So I'd just like to take a bit to talk about the details of the PAAP proposal, which, I mean, so I understand what you're saying is that there would be a sort of a phased requirement to come to equity in response times for wheelchair accessible versus non-wheelchair accessible vehicles.
Correct. First, we would need to gather data, determine what the average ride is for non wheelchair accessible vans and what the response time is for those accessible vehicles, and establish benchmarks throughout the next couple of months to get the disparity closer and to finally reach parity.
But you'd want us to state from the beginning, before even you start gathering data, that by a certain point in the future, you have to reach parity. Otherwise, you're subject to enforcement action, including loss of your permit.
Correct.
Can I follow up on that, Steve? Because so we heard earlier that there's some thinking of moving away from having a percentage of the vehicles that are accessible and more to a focus on a benchmark of service levels.
Right.
And so service levels is a fancy word for how long does it take for an accessible cab to come and serve you. And you probably already touched on this, but could you give us some parameters of what you think is an acceptable service level?
Well, that 30-minute reasonable response time sounds really good to me, but it's going to come out to what the average response time is for, say, sedans or those little Priuses, and match that up to wheelchair accessible vans. It could be 5 minutes. That would be heaven on earth. I would be able to do a lot more things in the city if I only had to wait 5 minutes for someone to pick me up. It could be 15 minutes. It could be 30 minutes. The big thing, though, is that they need to be equal.
Thank you.
Thank you both. So we're just going to finish up with a couple closing comments.
Jim, take some general, just a few general comments.
I would be remiss if I didn't thank the city staff for their professional support of the task force and their timely responses to our requests for information. They did a great job.
And let me just echo that. The commissioner's staff as well and PBOT staff, I want to do a particular shout-out to Francesca Patricolo, who has been serving us with the most wonderful smile and humor throughout all this, and she's going to be moving on to a different assignment. So we've given these volunteers, relatively easy task here, right? They have put in an incredible amount of time to get us here, and I feel like a proud parent whose kid finally got through high school, but now I have college and grad school in front of me. That's the next phase of this process, and we look forward to being able to enter that. We have a ton of work to do for you. Thank you.
You mentioned, I think, Mike, you said at the outset that you looked at other models, or maybe, Jim, you said that, other models in other cities. So what city has struck the best balance, in your opinion?
Well, there's been a lot of reference to Seattle, but of all the ones that I glanced through, and I have to tell you, I didn't read them in great detail, I think we can do better. I think we can be a jurisdiction that lets competition occur based on the level of service and efficiency and not on cohorts of people that you don't serve or other regulatory differences. We want to provide a regulatory framework that is consistent and then lets companies, organizations compete within that based on their performance and not because they get an edge from the regulations.
So, I guess one of my concerns throughout has always been that this free-for-all, I guess for better or worse, that's what it's been called, this 120-day period, turns out to be, a race to the bottom in terms of driver wages. And if you find that to be the case, are you going to, come back to us and say, that was the case? I mean, people are starving now. They may be starving right now as cab drivers. I mean, I will concede that, but in this unregulated frontier that we're being asked to go into, there seems to be a real chance of that happening, and I guess that's my biggest fear.
Well, I think that we have a pretty clear policy direction from this body to make that one of our concerns. And so as we look at the 120-day period and we begin to gather additional information, I'm confident that we'll come back to you with a recommendation that takes that into account. But again, you all set the policy. We try to give you the tools to execute the policy, and then we go home.
You know, Mike, we're in your debt for just an extraordinary report in a very short amount of time and a very thoughtful presentation. So thanks to you and everyone who has served. I guess I have two questions which may be best directed to you or to the commissioner in charge. One is, we keep talking about the 120-day period to test drive some things. What happens after the 120 days? Because there sounds like there could be, under this proposal, a significant amount of data mining, a lot of further analysis. So does this 120 days extend indefinitely under these rules, or what is your intent on that?
No, the intent is that during the 120 days, we gather data, which we then use in making decisions about a permanent regulatory structure.
And that would be made over what period of time?
Well, what I would hope, actually, is that over the first 60 to 90 days, we're getting a lot of useful data, and then council will be prepared to act by the end of the 120-day period.
Steve, what happens to the private-for-hire board of review? We haven't heard much about that. What happens to them as a regulatory body through this both 120-day period and looking forward?
Well, the transportation director actually has authority to promulgate interim regulations right now, so we'd be taking advantage of that authority.
So the board continues to advise her?
Yes.
The board continues to have a function?
Yes, the board continued to have an advisory function.
And then the other question I wanted to ask you has to do with medallions. I did a little scan on the internet, and I discovered that in cities that are going through similar experiments, the value of a medallion has come down precipitously because of the changing market conditions. And I guess the question I have, because I don't really understand the medallion piece as well as I should, we are potentially going to be proposing some very substantial changes to the marketplace, which are after-the-fact changes, which may have influenced, had some medallion owners known at the front end, the price they'd be willing to pay for a medallion and the market conditions for a medallion. So what is the impact on them, on medallions generally?
Well, we don't have a medallion system the way some other cities do. We give a certain number of permits to taxi cab companies. In fact, one of the things that we might want to consider is going to a system where it's the cab driver that has a permit, or it has a right, has a right to operate, rather than companies having the right to operate.
So the principle, unlike a medallion system, the principle equivalent here would be whatever investments a company made under a regulated system that is different from what the regulations are in an unregulated system.
Yes.
Other questions or other comments?
I have several, but first, thank you very much to you and the entire task force. This was a very accelerated process, and I know a lot of thought and effort has gone into it, so thank you very much. And you've answered a number of my questions, so just bear with me while I look through them. What happens, your recommendation is to do background checks over the past 10 years. What happens for somebody who hasn't lived in the United States for 10 years?
That's a level of detail that I can't specifically respond to. You'd have to get somebody who knew more about background checks than I do. My guess would be that that their background check would only go back to the point they entered the country. But again, I'd rely on staff to get into that level of detail.
Okay. And then going into the issue of the 120 days, would the temporary permit allow the TNC drivers to get on the road prior to training or testing, or what's the timeline expected to be for that?
I think it's the intent of the recommendation that nobody gets on the road until they've met the standards which you ultimately approve. We've recommended a variety of things for you, and once those are in place, the condition to do business in Portland would be to have it satisfied all those conditions.
And does that include requiring defensive driving training, do you know?
I'm sorry, I don't.
And what would the temporary permits mean for new taxi drivers and for the taxi companies? Are they potentially going to be expanding their fleet then and be told that if we stay with the current system after the pilot, what happens to their new drivers?
There's a sort of a system in place with approval of additional taxis. During the 120-day period, we will take a look at and make recommendations about most of those things. We're kind of headed in the direction of no limits. But in terms of that specific question, again, I'd rely on staff. I don't know the specific answer to it. Sorry.
Okay. Then moving to safety, first of all, I'm really concerned about not having fire extinguishers. That seems like a basic safety equipment that every one of us should have in our car.
Uh-huh.
So it would just be a matter of encouraging more people to have an extinguisher that could be used in an emergency, and they're not that expensive. So they're not that expensive. Why did you come down on?
We relied on the advice of the organization that sets the standards for the taxis, and the name of that organization is? There's an organization.
Yeah, I know. It's got some acronym, too. I noticed that. And again, on safety, the cap on hours of driving, 14 was considered if a person is full-time driving their cab, but presumably many of the ride, it's not really ride-sharing because it's ride-paying part-time, mm-hmm. Those drivers have maybe an 8-hour shift or 12-hour shift at their regular job, and then they're driving. Is there any, was there any discussion of, well, 14 plus 8 is more than 24?
We did not discuss that, but you have brought it up, and it'll be something we can look at during our...
Well, we are recommending that the total of time any driver drives, whether it be for a taxi company or a TNC or a combination, which is what happens in many communities, not exceed the 14 hours.
Yeah, but that's for driving. So if right. I was working a 12-hour shift at OHSU and then driving another 6 hours afterwards, I can guarantee you I would be unsafe probably by the end of the first hour, never mind it by the end of the sixth hour. So I think it's something that we need to look at because
good
that
point.
Relates to the experience has been in Seattle, where many of the taxi drivers have shifted to become Uber drivers and are therefore not making benefits. And so, and then that brings me to the question of the pilot. What recommendations do you have for providing assistance to taxi cab drivers during the pilot if they suddenly find the bottom has fallen out of their income source?
We didn't examine that or come up with a recommendation concerning that.
Commissioner, just to return to an earlier point, right now existing taxi cab drivers have 6 months to complete their training. They don't have to have it completed before they start driving.
Okay, thank you. That's a helpful answer. And actually, I had a response from the Revenue Bureau about taxes, and the taxes are due on the sale price in Portland, not the amount netted to Uber. So that will be an interesting discussion. And again, I agree with Commissioner Fish that we need to get these things agreed to in writing before we move forward. I think that's the extent of my questions for now.
Can I add one more, Mayor, to the commissioner in charge? Steve,
one more.
We talked a lot today about access, and we have a separate report on making sure that people that need to be accommodated are accommodated in a uniform way. What's the city's position as to whether the Americans with Disabilities Act applies to TNCs?
I don't know the legal answer to that question.
Let's ask. Good one.
And then I have one final one, and that is customer complaints. Will there be is there a requirement for a 24/7 complaint line?
Yes.
And also a lost belongings pickup?
Yes.
Thank you.
Commissioner, on the 24/7 complaint line, that was something I inquired about particularly because there was an article in the New York Times about a certain TNC company that didn't have a phone number in New York City, but there was some like small clothing company or something with the same name that did. So the clothing company was getting constant calls about TNC-related issues.
Yep. Okay. Again, thank you.
Thank you, Mike, very much.
Jim, thank you, all the members of the task force, for taking on obviously a complex set of issues in a short timeline and giving us excellent guidance. Thank you very much.
Thank
So Commissioner Novick, I know you have some invited testimony now.
We do. We think that we're going to hear first from the Transportation Fairness Alliance, and then from Darren Campbell of the PFHT, he's the board driver rep, and then from representatives of Uber and Lyft.
Okay. Good afternoon. Welcome.
Good afternoon.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Members of the City Council, my name is Stephen Cafori. I'm here today representing the Transportation Fairness Alliance, an informal coalition of traditional taxi companies operating in Portland. We formed to assist the city in its attempt to review present taxi regulations and amend them as necessary to accommodate the introduction of so-called ride-sharing taxi companies, or TNC taxis. Notice I use the term taxi to represent both business models, as we see little to differentiate between them. Both pick up passengers and deliver them to their destinations for a fee. The fact that the TNCs focus their model on the use of an app does not seem to be that significant to us. Although our business model is broader, as we use additional means in addition to apps, there's nothing that the TNC does that any local Portland traditional taxi company does not do today, which is why we're pushing so hard for the equal and fair. We are not afraid of competition. We compete fiercely among ourselves. What we do demand, however, is that competition be fair and equal. This is a proposition so self-evident that members of the City Council and the Innovation Task Force have both expressed their desire to ensure that these proposals contain this element as fundamental. Unfortunately, however, two factors have kept this goal from being achieved. First was the unrealistic timeline. When a three-month period was established for Phase 1, it was not understood how complex this industry is, nor how complicated its regulations have been developed over the decades. The result has been a rushed process in order to meet an arbitrary deadline, and the question of fairness and equity have not been adequately resolved. The other major flaw in this process was the badly thought-out attempt to keep the deliberations pure by keeping away members of Portland's taxi industry. Uber had successfully and cleverly promoted a view of our industry as being lazy, old-fashioned, and regulated by a compliant and protectionist city agency. Keeping us away from the deliberations of the task force was thought to keep any taint away from their final proposals. We were allowed to testify before the discussions began, and we were allowed to submit written testimony, but we were never able to sit at the table nor even answer questions from our seats in the audience. The result was that this group of citizens had to be educated in the workings of the taxi industry and its regulations, listen to proposals for change, then deliberate on the recommendations, all without any input, any meaningful input, from those people who know the industry best. Sitting as observers, we heard inaccuracies, misleading statements, and unfounded assumptions, basically, day after day, of ignorances being shared. And we realistically could do nothing to inform the task force or correct errors. We do not blame staff, nor assert that they purposefully misled the task force. It's just that they were hurt by their own process. They did not have the information. This problem continued through these months despite our repeated attempts to at least be able to answer simple questions as questions arose during the deliberations. The only person who saw this problem besides us was your professional facilitator, who agreed with us that at least one person from the TNCs and at least one person from the traditional taxis should sit on the task force. Ray Miles is going to follow me from Broadway Cab and provide some detail of the major examples of the lack of fairness caused by these two factors. We have supplied you with a multi-page list of the most egregious of these failings of policy based on the inaccuracies that were discussed and the inaccurate information that was given to the task force. Allowing this arbitrary timeline for the deregulation experiment to go forward would be a huge mistake in our view. Please take the time to do this right. Allow a member of both kinds of taxi companies, the Uber-type taxi companies and the traditional taxi companies, to assist in the process and provide a reasonable time to arrive at a conclusion that all parties can live with.
Good afternoon, Mayor and Commissioners. My name is Ray Miles, and I am the president of both Broadway and Sassy's Cab. I've been the president of Broadway Cab for 16 years. Prior to that, I worked for TriMet, managing the Lyft transportation program, and part of my job there was overseeing a large contract with Broadway Cab. With over 20 years of experience in this arena, I know this business inside and out. I also sit on the board of the National Taxi, Limo, and Paratransit Association, which has been following the evolution of the TNC taxi market for several years. I do want to make one quick correction. In fact, all of the companies that are current taxi cab companies in the city of Portland participate in the PACA agreement. So when we ran 10% of our vehicles, it was within code, and we were at least attempting to be compliant. Today, I am here speaking on behalf of the Transportation Fairness Alliance, and I'll offer an overview of the biggest issues we see with the task force recommendations.
If I may interrupt just one second. Mr. Mayor, that is very typical of the problems we heard. An inaccurate statement based by person with totally good faith, just not knowing what the correct answer was, and us not being able to say, wait a minute, that's not true. We could do that today. We need to be able to do that as the task force moves along.
I'm going to start by talking a little bit about insurance. The requirements and availability of TNC-specific insurance is still unknown. Portlanders should demand the same type of insurance coverage that is required for all commercial activities. For taxi cabs in Portland, that includes $500,000 in primary auto liability. The city should reconsider this requirement only when and if a viable app-on, app-off insurance policies are made and approved in the state of Oregon. Until then, the requirement should stand as is. On the issue of accessibility, the task force was unable to reach a firm recommendation on wheelchair accessibility, and their proposal let the TNC sidestep the issue for the time being by either referring or contracting these rides to other companies. The reason for this allowance was that wheelchair accessible service just isn't part of their business model. This is outrageous. It wasn't part of the taxi model either until it became a city mandate. Many restaurants still wouldn't be accessible but for ADA mandates. And the notion that a restaurant would be allowed to simply refer customers to an accessible restaurant across the street is intolerable in this day and age. So why would we allow it in transportation, which most would consider a more basic life function than dining out? This so-called solution is not consistent with Portland's values. It flies in the face of the ADA and is profoundly offensive to people with disabilities. On the topic of background checks, allowing companies to complete their own background screening is a horrible idea. Over this past weekend in Houston, an Uber driver was arrested on a rape charge. While the outcome of that specific case is unknown, one thing has been proven. The driver in question was authorized by Uber and had a felony drug conviction for which he served 14 years in federal prison. He was just released in 2012 and, until the time of his arrest, was driving for Uber. Currently, the Portland police perform background checks on drivers who want to provide private for hire transportation in the city. This does slow down the permitting process by 10 to 14 days, but that is not wasted time. It is time necessary to ensure we are not allowing known bad behaviors to provide service to vulnerable passengers. We support looking into ways to speed up this process, but not at the expense of an unbiased and thorough review. And let me just say, when somebody wants to contract with Broadway, at the very start of the process, Broadway runs an online background check to avoid wasting our time, their time, and the city's time. And about 99% of the time, the results of that background check and the results of the police background check come back the same. But about once a year, though, the police review catches something else, something that was not in the online review. Usually, it is an offense that is either very old or very new. There is a difference between the private databases and the police databases, and for this important function, the city should require the best possible information. I also just heard today that the state of Wyoming, the entire state, does not participate in any private online databases. The only way to access their data is through the police. My next topic is fairness and pricing. This is perhaps the most blatant example of giving Uber and Lyft an outrageous competitive advantage. They are able to set their own prices based on the cost to provide the service and based on current levels of demand, while the task force has recommended keeping taxi companies' regulated rates in effect. This directly conflicts with both the task force and city council's stated intent to create a fair and level playing field. On the topic of the cap removal, the task force is calling for an immediate entry of an unlimited number of for-hire vehicles before a comprehensive solution is developed. The smaller and newer cab companies have said this will likely force them out of business, not to mention the drivers themselves, many of whom are immigrants who already have limited options for making a reasonable income. On the topic of permitting fees, neither the task force nor the city has proposed a fee structure for the new companies, but both have expressed an intention to allow them to pay an annual flat fee. Meanwhile, taxi companies pay a minimum of $2,000 a year for the very small companies, and the large companies pay almost $150,000 each year in permitting fees. The total revenue for all cab companies in Portland is just under $500,000 per year in permit fees to the city of Portland. For the burdens of licensing fees to be remotely fair, the city would have to charge each of the new companies about $250,000 a year. The number that has been casually tossed about is somewhere in the neighborhood of $5,000 a year, clearly a competitive advantage. I would just throw out the devil is in the details, and there are many more smaller, a dozen or more smaller issues that are patently unfair or unclear in the task force proposal, and it is completely unrealistic to think they will be resolved in the next 7 days. We've outlined those issues for you in a written response, and I think it's in your packets. Finally, I would just say Uber and Lyft would have you believe that Portland needs to choose between the efficiencies of their business model and the safety measures and community values instilled in the current code. That is simply not the case. If we can get the right people at the table, we can develop regulatory solutions that embrace the new technology while continuing to ensure safety and promote community values. We just need to be willing to put the time and hard work into doing so, and that cannot also be done in 1 week. But if you do take that on, I am ready, willing, and able to help. Thank you.
Thank you.
Ray Miles has just spoken about fairness to the taxi companies. I want to talk about fairness to the city of Portland.
Before you do that, I just want to note that I read in the news that that Houston case, the driver continued driving for Uber for 2 months after the allegation without a city permit.
Could I, Stephen, when you continue, could either you or Ms. Miles address a question for us, which is since we all agree that we want a level playing field, and we all subscribe to the idea you got to play by the same rules. If you had to choose, would you opt to have a completely deregulated marketplace for 120 days, and then what would be the impact on your industry if we did that?
By deregulated, you mean both rates and number of permits?
Excuse me, with respect to rates.
Okay, just rates.
Because we have that two-tiered system, and there's a concern about maybe separate but unequals. What would be the impact for you if we treated you the same as a TNC under this proposal?
I think the fact that it isn't going to be in place during the 120 days is problematic with assuming that's a fair trial, certainly. There are times, and especially during those peak times of high demand, when everybody, every profit-based person, everybody who's doing something to gain a profit, would want to charge more. So I don't think we know what the real effect is unless the taxi cab drivers are also allowed to charge more.
And I guess the one technical thing that would change is, or the question that I would have if we had truly deregulated pricing, is how does the consumer know what that fee schedule is before they get into the vehicle? I'm guessing that you could require a TNC to give you that information. Well, because you pay in advance, the TNC would have to give you that information, and so you could flag it. How would you know before getting into a taxi cab that you might be subject to a surge pricing or something else?
Well, what other cities have historically done is you ask the driver for a quote when you get in the car. It used to be when you got off the airplane in Tucson, there were signs all over the airport that said, warning, our taxi industry is not regulated. Be sure and ask what the fare will be at the start of the trip, not the end of the trip.
It would be like like the Priceline model. You get in, you start negotiating, agree to a price, hard to enforce probably, and subject to some disagreements at the end of the ride. But
I mean,
and by the way, what is the principle? The TNCs require that you have a smartphone and you pay by a debit card or a credit card. In your business model, what do you prefer, cash or a credit card?
Well, certainly the credit card is a guaranteed payment, so right out of the chute there's an advantage to that. By and large, those consumers have some level of affluence in that they have a smartphone and they have a credit card. So while cash is king, sometimes at the end of the day, if you had to choose all of these customers or all of these customers, you would certainly take the guaranteed payment and the more affluent passenger.
Does giving the customer the option of paying by cash create special burdens for you in how you run your business?
It absolutely does. The drivers have to be able to make change, for one thing. They don't know, you know, sometimes what they don't know is the person behind them riding doesn't have the cash, and at the next stoplight, they're going to jump out and run like heck. That doesn't happen if you require payment in advance with a credit card. So all the risk will be concentrated on the cab drivers.
Do you know offhand approximately what percentage of rides that your cabs pick up are cash versus credit card or debit card?
We haven't looked at it in a couple years. It changes radically every year. I think roughly. It's about 60-30, 65-35, 60-40, somewhere in there.
Which is, what's the 60?
I believe more pay with credit card now than pay with cash.
Okay. Stephen,
go ahead. Ray, on the issue, there's been a lot of concern about the impact of changes in the system on drivers' livelihoods. The city heard a few years ago that on average, cab drivers make $6.22 an hour, which is not even minimum wage. What would you think about, and whether you're an independent contractor and therefore whether you're subject to minimum wage laws, is determined by state law, and currently under state law, a lot of cab drivers are considered independent contractors, and I think that under current state law, the odds are that the TNC drivers would be considered such too. What would you think about asking the legislature to change the independent contractor slash employee laws to say that if you are available as to drive a cab, either by having the app on if you work for a TNC or by some other indicator if you work for a taxi cab company, then you are an employee and get minimum wage and other protections?
I think potentially that's something that could be looked at in the future. Historically, it's been problematic because technology did not exist to track that driver's whereabouts, and so you couldn't tell whether they were actually out trying to provide service and provide fares or sitting under a shade tree reading a book. So I think it could be something we looked at in the future, but only due to technology and the ability to hopefully keep track of all these vehicles and make sure they really are endeavoring to provide service.
And on the issue of accessibility, what do you think of the PAP proposal that instead of relying on this percentage of fleet standard that we've used, there simply be a rule that that taxis and TNCs provide comparable service to people who need wheelchair-accessible vehicles or otherwise have disability issues, and that they all companies would be gradually required to reduce the delta between the, you know, response times for people with accessibility issues and people without, and after a certain period of time, people would just expect you to have comparable service, and if you did not have comparable service, you'd be subject to penalties and suspension.
I love the idea of taking a qualitative approach, not a quantitative one. In fact, I believe the taxi cab industry has been asking for this for years. One of our ideas was, let's create a different kind of plate to put on these vehicles so you can't move it off of a wheelchair van onto a sedan. Because what sometimes happens is a driver or a company will register a vehicle as a wheelchair-accessible vehicle and then move it onto a sedan and not actually have any vehicles out. So we've tried to push things that would solve that. I think the time is the best. I think we do need to strive. We need to be monitoring the response times and striving to get those as close as feasible.
And finally, the big picture question. It is somewhat unusual in the marketplace to regulate prices, and although it is done, for example, with electricity prices, but it's still unusual. And it's very unusual to have an absolute cap on the number of participants in any industry. Do you think that it's reasonable to assume that we will continue to have a limit on the number of participants in this industry and the kind of limits we have on prices today? Or do you think that those are regulations that at some point are likely to be abandoned in any case?
I think most of all is that the regulations evolve to protect all of our citizens, not a few citizens, all of our citizens. And I would rather see the city reconsider those kinds of regulations based on increasing service to our citizens rather than based on being pressured to by big out-of-state corporations.
But on that point, because there is a fairness issue here about the amount of, under the old system, the existing system, we've imposed a lot of regulatory requirements on you that have a cost. And now we're proposing to relieve a competitor of a number of those, which to me does not necessarily speak to a level playing field. Can you quantify roughly the additional cost that you bear in complying with the existing system that would not be borne by a TNC that's a competitor?
Well, running the wheelchair accessible vehicles is very expensive. And in fact, at Broadway, you know, we run close to 100 wheelchair